friends, welcome back to the Collective Conversations podcast, where we're having conversations at the intersection of faith and life. I've got Dr. Eric Recker on the show today, a new friend that we met, He is a dentist, but also just wrote a book called Win the Now. He has a great philosophy on not just winning the day, but winning the moment. And I think this is going to be a helpful conversation to anybody who's trying to just win at life, win at the moments of life. So hop in the conversation with us right now. Friends, welcome back to the Collective's Conversations. I've got Dr. Eric Recker as my guest today. He's a dentist in Middle America, Iowa. Interesting enough, he's also a triathlete, a pilot, a husband, a father, and he currently, or most recently, has authored the book Win the Now, which we're going to talk about. But I've got to ask, we were talking off the air, you biked across Iowa a couple times. What inspires you to become a triathlete? That just seems like the most crazy thing on the planet.
Well, actually, what inspired me is I got to go way back to when I was on the playground in elementary school, second, third grade. I don't know about you, but for me, recess kickball was life. In the early 80s, and getting picked for recess kickball was super important. So I was right now I'm 6'5", 220 pounds. At that point, I was a little shorter, obviously. I was kind of husky, hadn't really grown into myself yet. I was one of those kind of rough around the edges kids. And I was actually told that I couldn't play kickball. And I was not picked multiple times. It would have been one thing to get picked last, but it's another thing to not get picked at all. And so since I wasn't picked at all, I was told that I wasn't good enough. And all I wanted to do was have a chance to play, just a chance to prove to them that I was good enough, but I was told I wasn't. So on that playground, on the sidelines of the recess kickball field in third grade, I made a promise to myself that I was going to be so freaking good at everything that I ever did that no one would ever not pick me. That's a bold promise to make to yourself at that age. And so where this comes to the triathlon stuff was nothing in my life was ever good enough for me. School wasn't good enough. When I got into dental school, that wasn't good enough. Being in the top 15 in my class wasn't good enough. I had to be in the top 10. Then I started running all the way through marathon, and that was not good enough. Then I started triathlon because I figured that was the next thing to do, right? Because I was searching for this, what will validate me? What will show that I'm good enough? And I can tell you that doing 30 triathlons and two Ironman triathlons, I did not find the answer yet there. But I will say I'm somebody who loves to push myself. I love to push my body. I love to discover what we can do with our bodies. Our bodies are amazing and they're a gift. And what can we do with our bodies to get us to that next level, to have that next experience? So I would say getting me there was really born of that whole bullying story and believing that I wasn't good enough and that I had something to prove.
I don't think our friends who are listening know the level of 1980s kickball. Like, it was serious. Like, I grew up in Illinois. We were talking, I now live in Southeast Tennessee, but I grew up essentially your neighbor in Illinois, Central Illinois. Kickball was like, recess kickball was where it was. And, like, those teams were, like, serious. Like, every day was a championship game. Like, there was pride on the line. So, like, I understand, like, and unfortunately, I was probably the kid bullying kids, confession. I'm sorry for the kids that bullied you, but I was probably that mean kid because that's how it was. Recess kickball was like a proving ground of your athleticism. Like, it was the way it was.
It absolutely was. And I love my dad. My dad is one of my favorite humans on the planet, but he wanted to help. And so we would go there, and he bought a kickball, and we would go there, him and my mom and my brother and I, and he would pitch kickballs to me, and I would bomb them just to try to get some practice to try to help me get better at kickball. So I was thankful that I had that support at home. But
yeah,
it was a big deal being able to play recess kickball.
Yeah. I want to touch on this. You kept saying the words not good enough, whether it was kickball, whether it was dental school. When did it become enough, or has it become enough? I mean, you obviously push yourself, but when did you, have you gotten to a place where you found contentment in the enough?
The short answer is yes. The long answer would be I had to go quite a ways down the road the other way to get there. So I found myself, as you can imagine, when you're telling yourself you're not good enough, you always think you have to add more. There always has to be more in your life. So I would add more busyness at work, more schedule. I would add more events to compete in. I would add more. So I found myself at a time where I was building a new dental practice. I had just bought the practice from my father. I was coaching both of my kids in soccer. I was serving on 5 boards at that time. And as you can imagine, that led to some burnout. So I got to the whole, I had all this stuff. I started getting chest pains, heart palpitations, even got to the point of panic attacks. And it was actually to the point where I was really close to selling my dental practice and walking away because I felt like that was the only answer. In retrospect, looking back on it, it would have been the biggest mistake I could have made. But it felt like the only thing I could do. And through a series of unfortunate events with the person who was going to buy the practice from me, that fell through. And so I had to look at it. I had to look at life through a different lens, knowing that that escape was not going to be able to happen.
Yeah.
But the great thing about that is now I have this story. I have this journey that I've been on, and now I get to help other people on their journeys. And so I think that that is what has helped me realize that I am enough. I've been on this journey, and now the goal for what I would consider the second half of my life is to help people wherever they're at on their burnout journey, disillusionment journey, I'm not good enough journey, help them with a plan to move forward and to believe that good days are ahead instead of just getting in that grind and always having to stay there.
Yeah. And I feel like there's two extremes on the enough conversation. Your side of it, where I'm going to just keep grinding and doing more. And then the other side of it, I think, is people who don't feel enough don't do anything. They become apathetic and they almost disconnect completely. Where is the healthy balance between I'm going to grind and go after everything and I'm going to be apathetic and do nothing? So where's maybe that sweet spot of either contentment or settledness or realization that, you know, I am enough as God's designed me to be. So how do we find that?
Yeah, I think the only way we can find that is discovering our why, discovering our purpose. So I think without knowing my why, it was just keep adding more. And I think for a lot of people there, when they don't know their why, it's like, you know what? I'm not good enough. I'm a terrible person. I can't contribute to anything. My life is, this is as good as my life is ever going to get. A very fatalistic way to look at life. And so I like to describe it like this. One of my favorite movies is The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. So not sure if you've ever seen that movie, but Ben Stiller is a character who is just living this super gray life. Cinematography in the movie is unbelievable. But at the beginning, most of it is kind of gray and darker tones. He lives this pretty boring, pretty mundane existence. And over time, as the story develops, he starts to get an adventure and starts to find purpose. And color starts to get into his life. And I won't spoil it because it's an amazing movie. But to see the evolution of his journey from someone who's just kind of this little gray character to this amazing world that he discovers, it's remarkable. And when we don't know why we're doing what we're doing, we're not going to change anything. We're just going to stay in that same rut.
Right. So what was it for you? What was maybe the tipping point or maybe the breaking point where you go, I've got to really find my why? And then what for you, Eric, is the why of why you do everything? The dental business, the triathlons, the climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, the list goes on for you. What's the why behind all that?
The why for me, and I'm a huge faith guy. My faith is just bedrock for me. But my why is I exist to make a difference in the world for God and His kingdom that is utterly disproportionate to who I am. That's my why. I run everything through that filter. God does not need me to do that. He can accomplish His plan without me. But I want to come alongside with what God is doing and try to make the world a better place than what it was when I left it, or when I was here, just help make it better. Mm-hmm. So the real line in the sand for me was January 18, 2021. So that was a morning that completely changed my trajectory. I was in talks with my associate to buy the dental practice from me, then I was going to walk away. I didn't know what I was going to do. I hadn't figured out that I wanted to coach people and speak and write and do all that. I was in the process of writing the book, but I wasn't done with it yet. And then long story short, he was in a horrific car accident that morning, Monday morning, January 18.
Wow.
And he was very fortunate to survive. But that moment was the moment that I knew, oh man, this is not going to happen. The sale of the practice is not going to happen. I'm going to have to dig in and figure out a way through this. I'd been trying to go around burnout. I'd been trying to go around my problems. So I was going to just escape. I was going to get out of dentistry. That was going to be it. It was going to be fine. That's how I was going to move forward. But now I realized that I couldn't go around burnout. I had to go through it. And that was the moment where I realized I have to figure this out. And once I figure this out, I get to help other people figure it out.
Right. And it sounds like you had some indications. You said you were writing the book prior to the accident that restricted the sale. Were you already noticing in yourself the burnout and started processing that? Is that kind of where the book came from? You were already kind of processing that for yourself?
Yeah. So rewind to 2020. I had been really absent, just mentally. I would be home, but my mind would be elsewhere. And I think we have an epidemic of people being in one place with their body and another place with their mind.
True.
Absolutely. Our phones make that really, really, really easy. And that was the year that my oldest son was graduating high school. So we had a trip planned to Spain for spring break. This was going to be that trip. Like we had all the cool stuff. We were going to go to a bullfight. We were going to go take a day trip to Morocco to see where some of the James Bond stuff was filmed. We had all this stuff figured out. It was going to be amazing. Yeah. Then this little COVID thing happened, and it's a good thing we weren't in Spain because Spain was kind of the epicenter of COVID. But I did some, and then I came back in my dental practice. We ended up going to Kansas City instead, which was still great, but it was just so weird to see the world shut down. And I had to come back early because we had to shut down our dental practice. And I knew that it was going to be a while before I could go back. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I committed to, and I know this was God telling me that I needed to do this, but I committed to 30 minutes of quiet a day. I had never been who'd done anything with quiet. My mind was constantly going. And so I said, you know what, for this I didn't know it was going to be 8 weeks. It ended up being 8 weeks that my dental practice was closed. Every day I spent 30 minutes in quiet. Now I failed miserably at the beginning. Day one, I think I looked at my watch 46 seconds into it and I thought, man, I got to be almost done with this half hour. Because that's just, my brain was not used to quiet. Yeah. And through that time, I really realized the journey that I had been on. When you spend 30 minutes in quiet a day, and I don't do that anymore. I'm shooting for 15 as many days as I can now. Mm-hmm. But when you do that and you really let your mind get quiet, you start to think retrospectively. And I really saw what burnout had done to me. I really saw the toll it was taking on my family, on my health, on my team, all of that. And that's when I started I would listen for 30 minutes and then I would try to journal whatever I could remember that I had from that time. And that's when the win the now concept came. That's when I really understood the burnout and, okay, this is what it is. I named it. And here's some things that we might be able to do to work our way out of burnout.
Yeah. It's an important exercise. And in our faith, I pastor church, but in our faith practices, we call that silence and solitude, or at least silence. And I'm not very good at it either. My wife would tell you I'm terrible at it because I will walk in the house and I turn on music or something because the silence is really deafening to me. But it's such a critical practice, I think, because I think when we talk about the Lord, God often whispers to us and we can't hear the whispers over the noise in our life. And so I think what a great exercise, especially when maybe you're not facing burnout like you were, but maybe just facing a decision or facing some sort of critical impasse or whatever, we have to get to places. And Jesus was really good at this. Like, we read the Gospels, and my goal of 2024 is just to keep reading the Gospels. So I read one, read the next one, and just cycling through. He's often pulling away to what the Bible calls solitude places or solitary places. And I just think right now in our culture, it's hard to get away. Like, it's hard to get quiet. It's hard to escape all the things. So in that escaping that you sort of dealt with in 2020 and that sort of pulling back, what did you hear and what did you sense about life that was redirecting your path?
Yeah, so I knew that the pace that I was at was not sustainable. I knew that at some point, the heart palpitations, the chest pain, and the panic attacks that I was feeling, that those were going to level up. And there was a chance that I was going to become a statistic, that I was going to be one of those people that was in amazing shape and was, from all outer appearances, I was killing it. But I was going to be dead. It just was going to happen. I was going to have a heart attack, or I was going to have something that was really going to run me into the ground. And, you know, as you say that, Jeff, I'm also amazed by that. I'm trying to understand that even more, how Jesus had such a narrow window for his ministry. He had such a short time, and he knew that it was going to be a short time. So if we have a short time to do something, we feel urgency, right? And we think during that season, there's no extra time, right? I have to be using every single minute. But Jesus knew that time with his Father was so important that he did that. And so if he needed that, how much more do we need that? And so that was amazing to me. And really, that 30 minutes of quiet got me through the COVID time. It really did. And so I just started learning that I was someone who was not living present in my own life. I just wasn't. It wasn't fair to my family. It wasn't fair to my team. If I was at work, a lot of times I was thinking about how I was failing at home. If I was at home, I was thinking about things that were going on at work and how I wasn't doing my best there. And I have this, and I have this, and I have this. And I just had this spinning head that I could never get quieted. And I didn't have a name for it. And so that was one of the things that really came out of that quiet time, was the term false sense of urgency. Because I felt that I constantly had this spinning urgency. And I described the false sense of urgency as a background app that you can't shut off. You know, we have on our phones, we have all these apps, and we have a lot of them that are running in the background, and we can, you know, swipe up and clear all of those apps. But some of them continue to run in the background. And that's what I like in the false sense of urgency. It's constantly in the back of our head. It's telling us things like, you can't sit still. You can't be quiet. There's too much to do. You have all of these things to do. You have to have productive time. What are you going to do? Just sit on the couch all day? There, you got nothing to show for that. And so we have to figure out ways to shut off that false sense of urgency, or else we're never going to have time for rest. We're never going to have time for quiet. We're never going to have time for solitude and silence.
Yeah. So how did, I mean, you did 30 minutes, but how did you learn to quiet? Because I mean, I can sit for 30 minutes,
yep.
but the narrative is still going to run, right? So the voice in my head, the constant narrative of my thinking, how did you learn to quiet the false sense of urgency and either, because we never not have thought. Like, I don't think we can empty our thought. I think the Bible's pretty clear that we had to think differently. So how did you learn to think new thoughts in order to combat the false sense of urgency?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One of them was I just became a student of breathing. So I would really, really, really focus on my breathing. And I tried all kinds of different techniques. I would count my breaths. I would count my inhale and count my exhale. I would have phrases that I would say when I would breathe in and when I would breathe out. But I became such a student of my breathing that I would get to that point of just focusing so much on my breathing that eventually I would realize that there wasn't anything else running around in my head. And then I would just sit in quiet. I would let thoughts run into my head, but I wouldn't be judgmental about them. I wouldn't shame myself like, oh, I can't be quiet.
Yeah.
Come on, you just got to be quiet. Because I think the harder we try, the more we're going to fail. The point of it is the intention to sit in a quiet place where you can hear the still small voice of God that was not in the earthquake, that was not in the fire, but it's only there when we still our mind. So breathing was a huge thing. And I had a recentering phrase that I would say a lot of times. I would just say, I am here, right here, right now. And I would have to say that a lot of times, but I wasn't judgmental with myself about it. I wasn't shameful with myself about it. It was just, I'm setting this intention for 30 minutes. I'm going to set my timer. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah. So out of that, let's talk about when and now, the expression and then the book. Where was that birth? You've talked about this. You weren't living present in your own life. You were always striving. You get this false sense of urgency. So in this midst of quiet or learning to be quiet, where does the phrase in the life, when the now, show up?
So I was trying to figure out some kind of a phrase that I could use that would be catchy and sticky and help people to understand that when we're stuck in the past or worried about the future, we miss the one thing that's guaranteed, and that's life right in front of us. And so I was thinking, okay, I'm somebody who likes to grab wins. I'm competitive. So how about we do, win the day or win today? And so I did what we do when we're not sure about an idea. I Googled it, and there's a whole bunch in that space.
I think Mark Batterson wrote a book called Win the Day.
Yep. He did Win the Day, and there's a lot of stuff about that. John Gordon's right. done a bunch of stuff with that too. Right. And I love Mark Batterson, by the way. In a Pit with a Lion on Snowy Day is one of my all time favorite books.
Yeah, I know we got sidetracked. I got a chance to meet him, and incredible guy. So,
oh, that's awesome. So one day I have a prayer room in my office that I had somebody build for me. It's just an 8x4 room. It's got a little carpet mm-hmm. square on the bottom, drywall on the walls, and just a little lamp that I can dim and a chair. And I was sitting in there and I was just really discouraged one day. And I was trying to figure out, what's the way forward? What is the thing that's going to be traction for moving forward? And I was thinking about winning, and I was thinking about living life in the present. And it just came to me. And I know that, so I'm not somebody who hears audibly from God. People who do that, that's amazing. And yeah. I think that would be really cool. But we get that sense that right in the middle of the chest. And right. I felt win the now. I thought, okay, well, that's pretty cool. And then I had to go back to work because it was over lunch. But I just started processing that. And I said, okay, what does that look like in practicality? So a day is too much for me. I don't know about you in your day with all the things that you do in a day, but a day is too much as a metric for me. And what I found is I would come home to my wife at the end of the day and she would say, Eric, how was your day? And I would say, you know, this happened, or this happened, or this happened. So I was reducing my entire day to one thing that happened. And I didn't like that, because in a day, with when I'm in my dental practice, I can have 40 or 50 conversations in a day between my team, the patients that I see, the checks that I do for my hygienist, all of that. The day can be pretty noisy with all of that. So what Win the Now says is that the most important moment is the now. It's the most important thing we have. So right now, this hour, Jeff, is you and me having a conversation. That is the now. So then you see, what is the now and what does a win look like? So a win looks like you and I having a great conversation, us creating some value for listeners. A win might look like whoever's going to listen to this gets some hope for them to be able to move forward afterwards. And it's both of us being totally dialed into this moment, not being in another place. In my dental practice, a win or a now is a 15-minute amount of time. That's how I'm scheduled. So sometimes it's two 15-minute slots, sometimes it's eight 15-minute slots. But either way, in that time, what does a win look like? Well, it looks like a good conversation with a patient. It looks like helping someone who's anxious about being in my office not feel quite so anxious. It looks like a good procedure. A lot of things like that. And then there's a possibility that we might have a loss. You know, sometimes anesthetic doesn't work as well as we hope it's going to. Sometime I might be really behind and feel pressed for time, and it might feel like I take a loss in that time. What do you do with that? Well, I always keep a piece of paper in my pocket and I make a note about what I think that loss was. And then I leave it there. And then I get right back up because I have another now right in front of me, another chance for a win. When I have a little bit of time, I look at that thing that happened, that loss, and I ask myself just one question. What can I learn from that loss? And then when I learn something from it, that turns that loss into a win. And then we get right back up. And once we have a bunch of wins in a row, we start to have a win streak. So now at the end of the day, when I come home and my wife says, hey, Eric, how was your day? I'm more likely to talk about the wins that I got during the day. Maybe the lessons also that I learned, but it's a total mindset shift that has both brought me into the present moment and helped me think a lot more positively.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think, I don't remember the exact number, but I've heard a couple different places that we have a large number of thoughts. It's like 60 to 80,000 or some absurd number of thoughts. And like 70% of them are negative. Like for our normal sort of processing, most of us, the majority of our thoughts are negative thoughts. And so I can imagine, even in my own relationship with my wife, when we come to conversations of like, how was your day or how was whatever, we process out a lot of the negative things that show up and don't really celebrate wins really well. So how does our friends who are listening, who are just naturally battling the negativity of the world and the negative thoughts that show up, begin to go, how do I focus and see more wins? And then in conversations, celebrate the wins with those I'm having conversations with.
Yeah, I think that the key is finding yourself in the present moment. I really do. I think that is, if people can learn one thing from this, what we talk about, it is do everything you can to be in the same place, mind and body, because we are so stuck in the past and we are so worried about the future. And we watch the news and the news makes us more worried about the future. And social media makes us more worried and we compare more and we do all of these things. Social media is not all bad. There are good things about social media, but when we let social media and the news dictate our mindset, we're going to be negative. So I think we have to be careful about what influences we let in, what we're paying attention to, because we become what we're paying attention to. I'm sure you're noticing, Jeff, that as you are reading through the Gospels over and over, your mind is becoming more like Jesus. You are more likely to think that Jesus thought, at least Jesus is more likely to be on the forefront of your mind than just an afterthought. So we are what we think about. So we find ourselves drifting. We find our minds running to the negative. We come back to the present moment. And one of the most powerful things we can do is just express gratitude. Express gratitude for the current moment that we're in. Express gratitude for the fact that God has created technology where you and I can have this conversation together right now. Gratitude that we have lives that we're able to share the lessons that we've learned with other people. The funny thing that when you really think about it is kind of humorous that gratitude, when it's present in your life, worry, fear, stress, and anxiety cannot occupy the same space.
Right.
So if you are practicing gratitude, then those other things can't be present in that same space. So if you're struggling with anxiety, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, but I do know that one thing to do when you're struggling with anxiety is take out a notebook and write down 5 or 10 things that you're thankful for.
Right.
Yeah. And even
even our friends who are not in the faith-based field, not church friends, are saying that, which is amazing to me that even sort of popular psychology and different things are going, hey, a gratitude journal, which is what, you know, in pop psychology we're calling it, is something that even they're saying. And it's a biblical principle that in all things give thanks. And like the whole world's going like, hey, maybe these Christians knew something about this.
Yeah, exactly. And I have a coaching client that I've worked with, and she has been paralyzed with anxiety at sometimes. And so I told her, hey, why don't you try exhausting your gratitude? So get out a journal and write down every single possible thing you can think about that you're grateful for. Every single thing. And get really, really specific. Like I'm thankful for a window that I can look out. I'm thankful for air conditioning. Yeah. I'm thankful for a blanket when I get asleep, and then all the relationship stuff and all of that kind of stuff as well. And just do it until you can't think of anything else and see where your mindset is. And I think that exhausting your gratitude exercise is a really powerful one.
Yeah. Yeah. So Eric, our friends who are listening, maybe who feel burnout, maybe they feel hopeless, maybe they're at the end of whatever they're at the end of, and you do some coaching in this, what would be maybe step one for someone who's going, Eric, that's great. You're a dentist. Your whole world is set. You're a triathlete. You've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. You've got the world by the string, right? For friends who don't feel successful or don't feel like life is going their way, what is step one for them to win the now?
Yeah, so step one is just doing everything you can to find yourself in the present moment. Another great step is I've created a 5 days to knock back burnout challenge, and that's available on my website. So if you think that burnout is something that you're struggling with, go to the website and check it out. It's just a series of five emails that you're going to get. And it's okay to raise your hand and say, I'm struggling with this. And it's a good way to help push back the hold of burnout a little bit. I also have another freebie on my website is the 5 principles of win the now. If you're not really sure how to win the now, how to get in the present moment, I have 5 things that I do on a very regular basis that help me get into that moment. And let me say this, Jeff, my life looks pretty amazing on paper and in photographs. But the lessons that I have learned in doing all of those things is that if you don't know why you're climbing the mountain, you're not going to find the answer at the top. You're just not. So I did all those things. I didn't know why I was doing them. So I was in the midst of that crazy busy season. I was also training 20 hours a week for an Ironman triathlon.
Wow.
It's just way too much. So the only reason I'm able to help people with this is because I've made a whole lot of mistakes. I've overextended myself like crazy. I've been in that moment of the panic attacks and the chest pain and the heart palpitations. So on paper and on pictures and all that stuff, it looks great. But I've been to the pit of burnout, and it's miserable. And it starts when healing starts when you raise your hand and say, I'm struggling, and that's okay.
Yeah. So I think that's incredibly important. I think, I hope culturally we've moved to a place where we can acknowledge some things better. But I think sometimes we get in places where to begin acknowledgement means like a sign of weakness, like, especially as guys, I think that's a common thing. Like, oh, if I ask for help, it means I'm weak, or if I ask for help, I'm not, whatever. So how did you get to a point? Obviously you recognize it in yourself, and I know you have coaches in your life and you have people who are giving you counsel. How did you get to a place where you go, Eric, you have to ask for help? What was sort of the tipping point for you in that?
Yeah, so one of the other huge things that I think is just critically important is that we have to surround ourselves with good people. We just have to. COVID told us that other people are toxic and we have to stay away from other people. And unfortunately, a lot of people are still living under that operating system. I understand that being able to work from home is a nice convenience. And live stream church services and all that kind of stuff. But really what's happened is we've chosen a life of convenience over a life of human interaction. And I think we're paying the price for it. So fortunately, I had a good friend that I have lunch with every Tuesday, and we've been doing that for about 15 years. And I finally, there's so many days I wanted to tell him about my struggles and I just didn't feel like I could. And when I started getting it out in the open and started saying to my friend Todd, hey Todd, I'm struggling, man. Like, I had a panic attack on the floor of my server room this week. It was miserable. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get up off the floor. And he was able to listen to me, and I didn't need him to give me answers. I just needed him to listen to me. And I think especially as guys, it's really hard to find some of those people that you can trust to be able to have those conversations. But if you never take the first step and ask someone to go out for coffee with you or ask someone to have a conversation, then you're never going to have those relationships. It took at least 10 years of us meeting together before I really felt comfortable sharing that depth of the level of my story. And we just need to be comfortable being uncomfortable if we want any change. Who cares what somebody else thinks about us? You know, if it's somebody we can trust, who cares what they think about us? We got to get that story out. We just have to do it.
Yeah. And what I found, Eric, is if they're trustworthy, they're probably not going to judge you. Like, in our mind, we've already played the scenario of like, oh, if I tell them this, they're going to think whatever. And we've already kind of played it out. Odds are whatever the narrative is not true. Whatever we think they're going to think is probably not the case. If they do, then it's probably the wrong person to confide in. So I love that, to surround ourselves with good people, trustworthy people. And so I think that's... I don't know that we know the depth of what COVID cost us, like as far as relationally. I think time will tell. I hope we can turn some things around. But I remember after we finally back to some normalcy, walking through the store, and if somebody was in the aisle, I would turn and walk the other way. And just this disconnect. So you talked about sort of our natural operating system is disconnecting. How do we maybe move to a place of really learning to reconnect with people?
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we don't think that we can just flip a switch and go from disconnected to connected, because it doesn't work like that. It really doesn't. And, you know, tough concept, but we have to put ourselves out there. we have to put ourselves out there. The good news is there are groups out there. There are ways that we can do this. If you feel like it's too big of a leap to reach out to a friend to talk about this, more good news. We have lots of people who can listen to you. We have pastors. We have mental health professionals, coaches. I have people that have raised their hand and reached out to me, and they didn't feel like they could have this conversation with anyone else. And I've been able to walk with them on their journey and help them towards healing and help them learn how to create some of those good networks in their life. But if you have somebody that you're even in some kind of a casual relationship with, reach out to them and say, hey, you want to have coffee, and then get together and have coffee and just start talking about life. You don't have to go right to the burnout depth of that the first time, because you might scare them away, but learn about their family. Tell them about your family. Start to have some of those conversations and then put yourself out there just a little bit. The good news about a mental health professional who I have seen, who all of my family, my kids have seen therapists, because we want to be our best version. You can walk into that room and you can unload anything that's on your mind.
Yeah.
And it can stay there. It has to stay there. Legally, it has to stay there.
Right.
The safe space. So try to find those safe spaces where you can be honest and vulnerable with people, because the healing on the other side is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I agree. We are advocates of therapy in our family too. My wife and I both have been in therapy. Our kids have experience therapy. We just think it's an important thing. And it's kind of a great segue to our last question, talking to somebody. The show is titled The Collective's Conversation. So who is one person, either historical, present day, fictional, or in your real life, that you want to sit down and have a conversation with?
Yeah, I mean, so the easy answer is Jesus, right? Obviously, that would be amazing to do that. And I would love to do that. But somebody else that I would like to talk with is Ted Lasso. So I don't know
Ted Lasso.
If you've seen Ted Lasso. I think a lot of people have, and I mean the character Ted Lasso. Like I would just like to spend some time with him. What's interesting is Ted Lasso dealt with extreme burnout and anxiety. And he was still able to have the mindset that he had, and he was still able to get into people's lives and just drop these nuggets of, what did you just say? That's unbelievable. So yeah. Ted Lasso would be the guy for me.
I 100% agree, and I'm hoping that, like, secretly there's a fourth season coming out. I don't know, but I'm kind of hoping that's the case. I loved that show. Yep. When we started watching it, I was so surprised by the character of Ted Lasso. Like, I knew the premise going in, but those nuggets of truth and just the believe and just all the things, it was like a motivational speech every time you watch the show. Loved Ted Lasso. If you follow me on social media, you probably already know that. So, Eric, thank you, man, for sitting down. Thank you for sharing this with us. Where can we find the book, Win the Now?
Yeah, so you can find it on Amazon, or you can find it on my website, ericrecker.com. I actually have another book that's going to be coming out mid-April. So stay tuned for that. I mean, that'll be just a couple weeks after this comes out. That one is going to be called That Damn Analogy, and it's going to be all about how our life is just the flow of energy that goes through our bodies. So we're really good at the outflow part, and we suck at the inflow part. We're not good at taking care of ourselves. So it's just kind of, it's that. But yeah, on my website, you can connect with me for a coaching conversation, hire me as a speaker, any of that kind of stuff. That's kind of home base for me.
Awesome. Excellent. I know you're very busy, but we're present in this moment. But I'm going to let you get back to doing the dentistry things here. But as we always say here at the show, you've got to see the table. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. This has been great.
Wow, what a great conversation that was. Thanks for joining us in the conversation. If something from the conversation really stood out to you, would you share it and tag me on social media at Jeff_Pitts_ on Instagram? And we would love it if you would rate and review and subscribe to the show. That just helps us reach more people with these great conversations. And as we always say, you've got a seat at the table. Thanks for joining the conversation.